Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, amazing actress Lauren Lapkus, and you'll find out all about her coming up. She's a really funny woman. You definitely will recognize her. That's coming up news as well. First, Tommy John working from the home. Used to be a fantasy. Now it's sort of a obligation, but let's be comfortable. You're not going to be comfortable unless you're wearing Tommy John. They have a whole work from home situation going on. They got a line of stuff that is so comfortable. The loungewear, super soft, breathable underwear as well. Answering emails from bed or hanging out, watching a little TV and tapping away on the computer. Do it in Tommy John right now. Tommy John is offering all customers 25% off site-wide. Upgrade to the softest, most breathable fabrics you've ever worn. I'm wearing my Tommy John underwear right now. I'm actually wearing my Tommy John t-shirt as well. And when I get home, I slide right into the Tommy John loungewear. So soft, so comfortable. It is the best pair you'll ever wear. It's free guarantee. Tommy John, no adjustment needed, right, Dawson?
Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam for 25% off your order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 25% off orders. TommyJohn.com/Adam. See site for details.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Adam, your John Hyatt, who I also love too because of you, is my Billy Joel. And a very sad day in my life just happened. Sirius changed the channel that was the Billy Joel channel to the Prince channel. Ah, need I say more? Thank you.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
And in the middle of a pandemic, curse you, SiriusXM. Lauren Lapkus is joining us. She is in a new movie, The Wrong Missy. It's available tomorrow, as you hear this, on Netflix. Yes. And co-stars at David Spade and Nick Swartzen. And the trailer looked really funny. I have not seen the movie yet, but it was a very funny trailer. Good to talk to you, Lauren.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
I'm doing well. As anyone who listens knows, I'm a huge Crashing fan.
Oh, nice.
And I just love that series. I'm sad that it's completed. You played Pete Holmes' wife and first wife, and it was kind of nice because you were all over the kind of the first season and few episodes, and then you made your way back, which is, I guess, a good
thing. Yeah. It was good for me. I was glad. it was one of those things where after, you know, you scream at someone and get a divorce from them and on the show, you kind of think they won't have a reason to bring you back. But thankfully, I still stayed in his life a little bit. So it was good.
It was just a really, I mean, I love stand-up, and it was such a great slice of stand-up life, you know, very real depiction of what that life at that level was.
Yeah. I agree.
What is your history? Have you done stand-up? Have you always performed sketch, improv? Tell us.
Yeah, my whole background is improv. So I've been doing that for like 15 years and sketch as well, but mostly improv. And I never did stand-up. So I love that kind of show as well because I love that seeing the lore of the stand-up community and all those classic people coming back and doing sets. But yeah, I have an improv background. I'm from Chicago. I grew up in Evanston, right outside of the city, and I did improv at IO and then moved to New York and joined UCB there. And I've been in LA for like 10 years now doing that out here. So
I'm trying to think if there's any chasm between male and female in potential improv I don't mean potential improv, but I'm just saying, like, I have a son and I have a daughter, and in the past, you know, just getting into comedy, it's like, well, there's Lucille Ball and there's Joanne Worley and there's Phyllis Diller, but a woman can't get into comedy. But I feel like if you went to a Groundlings class, it'd probably be about 50-50 these days, right?
Oh, yeah. These days, it's so different. I mean, even just in the amount of time since I started, I feel like so many more women have started doing it. But when I started 15 years ago, I mean, my classes had a good amount of women. But it was one of those things still where once you got on an improv team, there probably would be one or two women on each team. So it was still a lower number. And I mean, you know, there are always those female influences everywhere if you look in the right spots, but it's not as obvious. And when I was a kid, like, I loved David Spade and Adam Sandler and those guys and Chris Farley, and those were my like comedy idols. So it's kind of crazy.
Well, this is a Sandler movie, or we'll call it a Happy Madison movie or something. We'll call it that.
Yeah.
And that's, you guys shot in Hawaii?
Yeah, we did, which was amazing. We were shooting at the Four Seasons for like 7 weeks, so I can't complain.
Nice.
Tough stuff.
Really hard. It was really hard, you guys.
Does Sandler always end up in Hawaii because he wants to go to Hawaii? Or was he there?
He was there for part of it. I mean, I'm sure it is like a pull for them with these movies. Like, why would you not? If you could pick where the movie's going to be, make it somewhere awesome.
No, look, I love the new look. The new world order is Jay Leno loves cars, and he used to have to host a Tonight Show and then love cars when he was done hosting a show. And Phil Rosenthal loves travel and food, and he used to have to work on Everyone Loves Raymond to save up enough money to go to Italy and have some food. Now everyone just goes, fuck it. I like cars. I'm doing a car show. I want food. I'm going to do a food show. Sandler goes, totally. I like Maui. I'm going to Maui. Like, we'll film it there.
True.
Right. And it's like, but Adam, this is a story about the Donner Party in 1841. I don't care. It can be tropical.
Why can't it be the Donner Luau?
Yeah. Plenty of people have died in those mountains. Come on, get creative.
Yeah.
Jackie Sandler's wife is in the movie.
Yeah, she's like the sweetest person. Do you know her?
I don't know her. I know him, and I know he's super nice.
Yeah, he really is. But she is like the nicest person ever. She's so thoughtful. I like complimented her perfume, and then she bought me the perfume. I was like, this is just like a very sweet lady. She's like awesome.
Right.
And she's so funny in the movie. She's really fun to work with. So it was cool. I mean, that's another thing I really like about what Adam does. It's like he brings in his family, and like they get to have so much fun together. It's just like a perfect family excursion.
It's interesting with Hollywood types. So like if you commented on, I don't think there's a middle. Like Hollywood, if you complimented a woman on her perfume, you'd either get a bottle of perfume or you'd have her yell, why are you sniffing me?
Or a restraining order.
But yeah, you don't get a middle ground. Like the rest of the country is like, oh, okay. I'll tell you what it's called. So nice that you got the nice.
Yeah. I was happy about that.
I'm wondering, maybe being nice, you know, when you think about the Adam Sandlers or the Judd Apatows of the world. These guys are like famously nice. Totally. Maybe nice, you know, bossy and shitty is a little bit of a sprint, but it's not really a good marathon kind of approach.
Yeah.
I think the Henry Winkler approach is a better way to go, because everyone eventually dates everyone again in this town. Like, you have to work with these people again, and if they don't want to work with you, then you're screwed.
No, it's so true. I think it really leads to like a long career. The people that I've worked with who are so nice too, like it spreads, and you tell people like, oh, they actually were really cool, and then everyone wants to work with them. So it's just, yeah, it's definitely the way to go. But I mean, the people who are really hardcore and like intense and mean still seem to be really successful too. So I don't know, maybe there's no
sure. Yeah, I you know, whether it's Harvey Weinstein or Ellen, and I'm not saying Harvey's as bad as Ellen, but what I am I'm saying eventually it kind of catches up to you. Like,
people get less scared of you, I think, over time.
And you have,
and those are just,
yeah, go ahead.
Those are just the ones you've heard of. That's, you know what, true. I mean? Imagine how many other shitty people there are in this business who you'll never hear. They're never hear names because they're shitty and they're not super talented. You know what I mean? They're not like a Val Kilmer level actor, you know, for example.
Well, Val Kilmer is an interesting pull for that. I like that.
I've heard some negative things.
It really? Okay. I don't know.
Have you not?
No, I know. I haven't. I don't know. I don't know anything about him, I guess, but I'll Google it later.
I've heard some things. And my camera just went out, but my voice can be heard.
Okay.
I think when you're nutty, it helps you be a better actor in certain respects. And so what you're dealing with is nutty people. And nutty people kind of turn into mean people when you put them under pressure. And I think that set has a lot of pressure. It lets nutty people get mean fast.
Well, and when you have a lot of success and like everyone caters to you, there's like no reason to be nice after a certain point. Like if you're someone who has the impulse to be mean and everyone's willing to go along with whatever you do anyway, then like, why would you stop?
Well, the movie, how does it work for you? Do you audition? Does somebody see you on Orange is the New Black and go, oh, let's get Lauren in here?
Yeah, interestingly, I had a small role in a Heavy Madison movie like years ago called Blended with Drew Barrymore. Yeah. I played a babysitter in that movie. I had a very small part. And I got an audition for this movie just through my agent, same way I got that audition. So it was just a random thing that came through. And I really auditioned truly because I saw that David Spade was going to be in it. And I think he's so funny. So I was like, oh, I'll go see what that's about. And it ended up being really fun. I mean, the character is like so funny and crazy. And that's also like a dream thing for me, because in my improv, I tend to play really insane characters who say offensive stuff. So it was really fun to get to actually be cast in a role where I got to do all that.
My sister is also named Lauren, but nice. At some point, probably about your age, 20 years ago, she changed the spelling from Lauren to Lauryn, which I've never condoned.
And why did she do that? Was there a reason?
I think it was her horrible childhood, but I'm no clinical scientist, but I don't think swapping out a letter in your name, especially when it's pronounced the same, is really going to cure having a bad dad. But that's me. But for you, you grew up where?
I grew up in Evanston, where Northwestern University is, if you're familiar. People usually know it from that. But yeah, it's a suburb outside of Chicago, and it's a really like liberal town and very diverse and cool place to be. It's very supportive of the arts.
And what were you thinking about doing when you were a high school senior?
Exactly this. This was my dream. So I truly just wanted to be a comedian and actor. And that's what I was working towards from a young age. Mostly doing just like plays at school or whatever. But then in high school, I had a teacher who suggested I take improv classes. And I started taking like adult improv classes when I was in high school. And that was really the game changer for me that pulled me onto like a real path towards making a career. But I didn't know it at the time.
What a great counselor to spot that and suggest that. I think my counselor suggested that I sit down and shut up. I think that's the counseling I got.
I wonder, Lauren, how much do you think of that is because you were Chicago adjacent? Like you know, improv is huge in Chicago. Maybe in other parts of the country, you wouldn't have gotten that kind of encouragement.
I don't know that I would have. Yeah, I mean, this teacher specifically used to build sets for Second City. So he also was really familiar with what they did. And so he recommended it. His name is Aaron Carney, and he's great. And he suggested that I do that. And that was really it, too. And because I admired him, it was part of it. I mean, I like thought he was so cool. So like the second he said it, I was like, OK, I'll actually go do it. I'd already read like every book about SNL and everything you could read about Second City. I just didn't know I could go take these classes.
Well, Mr. Tomey, if you're listening... By the way,
Carney.
Tomey is mine. Tomey was my counselor.
Oh, it's your counselor. I see.
Yes. Okay. And I don't know his first name because we didn't have that kind of casual relationship. So
first name, Mr.
If that is your first name, Mr. Tomey. But Mr. Tomey, I could have used such guidance. And I didn't grow up in Iowa. My school was North Hollywood High. It had the word Hollywood in it, right in the title, Hollywood. North Hollywood High.
So what were you doing at the time? Like, what was your dream at that time in your life?
I was like my childhood when I was like a senior in high school, like about that age we're talking about. I was in a kind of a... We're in a lifeboat and we have to survive for, you know, a month. And then people would say, yeah, but what was your dream? Did you want to have surf and turf and a dessert with five toppings on it. And my thing was like, I want dry land. I just want to get my feet on some fucking land. Like, that's my dream. We'll figure out the surf and turf after we find land. But for now, I want to find some land. So I was like, my parents didn't have money. I didn't have money. I didn't get good grades. I wasn't going to college. So, and we were in a depression, which a lot of people don't realize. But in 1983 was one of the worst economies since 08. Mm-hmm. When they were talking about 08 and 09, they were going, since 1983, the job market was scarce. I didn't have any skills. And my thing was like, I got to get a job. Like, I just wanted a job. That's all I wanted. Improv classes would have been fun.
Well, my privilege is showing for sure. I mean,
I wish I did. I did take improv. Once I got on land, like once I got my job, and once I got an apartment with the roommates and the truck, and like once I got a few of the basic necessities of life, then 4 or 5 years later, I started taking groundlings classes on my own. So I was kind of on your path, but I just took a little delayed approach to it.
Yeah. I feel lucky that I got to start so early because, I mean, the people in my classes were all in their 20s. So I felt like I was, you know, the boring kid who was coming in talking about my homework, and I didn't really know if I had anything to add. But it was really good for me to push myself to like hang out with older people and see what I could learn.
Yeah. I remember for me, it was a big culture shock going to the groundlings because people were educated and they had these theater backgrounds and they came from all over the country. You know, I grew up with my buddies in North Hollywood. I didn't know anyone who was from Boston. New York. Where are all these people? I never saw one of them. I never, my family, their friends, nobody was from, you're just from LA. That's all I knew from the San Fernando Valley. Like, it was crazy talking to people that just went to school in all the different parts of the country. And then they all showed up at the groundlings, which was, you know, 5 miles from where I lived. But for them, you know, it was across the country.
Yeah. Did you feel resentment towards them for that stuff or no?
No. I was always just a little amused and a little confused, you know, especially when they'd start talking about like, well, I did my junior year abroad. I went to Switzerland and I studied there for a year. And then I was like, I just go, how did that work? What do you mean? How did it work? It's like, you get on a plane, you get your papers, you know, you do whatever. And I was like, how?
Yeah.
I was like a villager, like a superstitious.
Yeah. I mean,
villager.
I think that's so relatable though, that nothing is explained to people. And like, I feel like, yeah, I came from a family where my parents went to college and they kind of expected that of me. So it was explained, you know, at a certain point that that's what you would do. And this is how that works. And you apply and you do these things. But so much stuff just isn't explained at all. And you just have to figure it out. It's really unfair.
And it's,
I think it's
generational too. Mm-hmm. And it's insidious. And whenever we talk about the haves and the have nots, we always talk about money, but it's really not money. It's information. Like the people that have shit, you know, I sit around my 13-year-old son and I go, hey, man, you should do this and you should do that. And here's what we're going to do. And I do a podcast and you want to do sports, you could do sports and blah, 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 versus a vacuum of information. Life is a bitch and then you die and you got to go out and work for shit money or sell drugs or whatever. They just never get the information.
Yeah. Yeah, it's totally true.
And it just gets passed on. It just gets passed on to the next generation because then they don't have the information. And I wish we had a more concerted effort, like as a culture, to put it instead of a monetary, there's a monetary side to it, but it's a lot less monetary and a lot more information that needs to be dispensed.
Yeah. And if school was free, that'd be great too. I mean, school is insanely expensive. I feel like my parents wasted their money on my college.
How much did your school cost?
Whew.
No, I went to DePaul, actually.
Same difference.
Yeah, it is the same difference. I think it was probably $30,000 a year or something. I mean, it's crazy.
What is it now? What do you think DePaul is?
I don't know what it is now. Because that was like, I graduated in 2008, so that was 12 years ago.
Well, and maybe this year the online tuition will be significantly less.
God, I hope so. I mean, how's that going to work for everyone right now? It's so sad for kids that were about to go to school or have that. All those experiences.
I got these kids in my neighborhood who are like high school seniors, and they decorated their SUVs with all the paint, you know, and tied balloons to it. And they're like circling around celebrating little
That's
Dakotas.
Cute.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of cute. Some of them have the college they're going off to. And there's this weird new paradigm where people are like celebrating in their driveway. There's yeah.
I know. It's making me really sad, actually, to see. I feel like it's hard for kids. I've seen some kids have birthday parties that way where they're like standing outside and all their friends drive by and like they start crying. And it's like just so confusing. You can't touch anyone and say hi. It's just weird.
Think about kids' birthday parties. We're at social distancing. We started with the pinata. Like, we're going to take this kid, we're going to blindfold him, we're going to get him disoriented, we're going to give him a mop handle, and he's going to start swinging it around randomly in the air. Like, think about how much safer kids' parties have gotten. There's a house in my neighborhood where there is a front yard with a fence, but it's a wrought iron fence, so you can, you know, see right through it. And then there's like a garden chair, like a two-person garden chair, and it's facing the fence, and it says, if you want to chat or have a visit, just like text this number and have a seat, and I'll come out of the house and we'll have a chat. And I thought, man,
but like a stranger could do it.
Theoretically a stranger could do it, but it would probably be someone who's walking around the neighborhood with their dog, so it would theoretically be a neighbor. But I started thinking to myself, God damn, that person is so much better than I am. I'm so much like I.
I don't want to do that. I don't want to go outside and have a chat with whoever's calling. Well, that sounds horrible.
Who's better, the person in the house or the person who stops and goes, I would like to have a chat with this thoughtful person?
Oh, that's the key master and the gatekeeper.
Yeah.
An old riddle?
DePaul, by the way, is about 40 grand right now.
Okay.
I'm so cynical. I was like, I bet they just put this up knowing it wouldn't get, no one would stop and text.
Yeah, but it just looks cute.
But I
get credit for the pickup.
I walked by the other day and there was a guy sitting there chatting through the fence.
Wow.
I know.
I mean, I think people are really starved for connection. It's very real. I have a friend who lives around the corner and he'll come and talk to me over my fence for like, you know, 30 minutes at a time. But that's as much human interaction as I'm getting right now.
I think you're right. We were taking a walk over the weekend just around the neighborhood, and I didn't know where this voice was coming from because they had these huge, tall bushes and topiaries. And the woman goes, would you like some mulberries? You can pick them right off the tree. And we're like, where the hell is this voice coming from? And so we peek through, and she's just sitting in her lawn by herself telling us about how they make mulberry jam, and you should pick those, and those are good, and take as many as you want. People are starved right now, you said.
Yeah.
It's funny it's funny that you bring up topiary, because one of my earlier improv recollections, along with like these people are so exotic because they come from Boston and Philadelphia and they went to college and they seem so smart. Somebody brought up the term topiary. And I was like, I have no.
You were stumped.
I'd have no.
Well,
idea
I texted about a topiary to my friend the other day, and she was like, I had to Google what topiary was. I guess it's one of those words that you either know it or you don't. It's kind of a weird surprise.
Well, I didn't when I was 22 and a half from North Hollywood, but when I found out what it was, I thought, man, is that person smart? They're so smart. They just threw that out. I think they were talking.
It does sound like kind of a smart word.
And I think they were talking about the front of Disneyland, as I recall.
Oh, yeah.
Lousy there. With topiary.
Yes.
Iconic.
All right. So, Lauren, you going to hang in with us as we move into the news here? Good. Mm-hmm. Let me hit Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. Perfect drink for your next virtual happy hour. Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey isn't your average flavored liqueur. No. It is something special. This stuff is fun. Do a shot of it or give it a couple of sips. Like I said, back when we used to have parties, we had it all over our Christmas party over here, and it was a fan favorite. It's made by husband and wife duo and American whiskey that's got a peanut butter flavor to it. And what isn't better with peanut butter, by the way, flavored in it? Tastes amazing by itself. Neat. You can do it over the rocks or do a shot and have some fun. Elevate that next cocktail party, that Zoom cocktail party you have. And it's a conversation piece as well. Or give it a little shot in your coffee. Why not? Screwball. Also donating hand sanitizer, which they're making now, too, to hospitals, police, firefighters, and more. This stuff is good. Screwball peanut butter whiskey, right, Dawson?
Screwball, the original and most awarded peanut butter whiskey, is now available near you at 70 proof. Screwball peanut butter whiskey is the perfect shot or the perfect addition to your favorite cocktail. Pick it up at your local store or get it delivered today. Ready to get screwed? Ready to hashtag get screwed? Go to screwballwhiskey.com for more info. Enjoy responsibly. Advertisement by Screwball Spirits LLC, San Marcos, California. Whiskey with natural flavors and caramel color. 35% alcohol by volume.
All right, let's take a quick break, come back with Lauren, and do the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gino Grad.
Well, I hate starting the news this way for the second day in a row, but definitely would be remiss if we didn't. Veteran comic actor Jerry Stiller, known to younger generations, of course, as Ben Stiller's father, and of course, George Costanza's father on Seinfeld, has died. Natural causes. He was 92 years old. Born in 1927 in New York, married to Ann Mira, like I said, father to Ben Stiller. He was not just known for being Frank Costanza, but he was also Arthur Spooner on King of Queens. You might remember that. Has over 80 film and television appearances. Ann Mira died in 2015, and Stiller is survived by children Ben and Amy and two grandchildren.
Well, it's sad, but refreshing to hear a dude outlasting the wife on occasion, you know, so chalk that up as a victory, fellas.
That's a W.
He said born in 23, did you say?
Born in 7.
27, sorry. How much has that guy seen? I mean,
oh my God.
The guy was born not too far after World War One. I mean, the cars. I mean, half the cars he saw were horses when he was three, right? I mean,
that's amazing to think about. My grandma is 94, and just thinking about everything she's experienced, and like now having to deal with the coronavirus, and like staying home and alone. It's such a weird arc to life. All the things you can experience in like 100 years.
How old's your grandfather?
My grandfather passed away.
See,
so
that's a victory.
Yeah. I know,
that's
you guys are sorry for...
Now we're even.
Yeah, Jerry Stiller was the funniest ever. There, I just saw some bloopers from Seinfeld on Twitter that were hilarious. I think people should go look those up. He's like, he's just the funniest guy. He's such an amazing actor.
What amazing life. And then how much better is it when your son can have that much success and you can be around for most all of it? Like, that's incredible.
So yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it's amazing too when a family has that much actual talent. Like, it's not just nepotism. Like, Ben Stiller is hilarious, and he had amazing parents who were so talented that he got to watch as he grew up, and then he became an amazing star. I mean, that is amazing that he got to witness that.
I talked to Ben Stiller at Jimmy Kimmel's house once a number of years ago, and I remember this story of when I used to work installing closets. I installed a closet into a woman's house who lived in Topanga, who I sort of knew, and she knew I was into comedy, and she pulled out that bowling Color of Money Ben Stiller parody that I believe we've seen before, or we've shared it before. Lauren probably may not have seen it, but
I don't think so.
One of the first things Ben Stiller did was a kind of bootleg send up of Tom Cruise in Color of Money, but with bowling. So he was Tom Cruise as a bowling hustler, and he must have done that, Max Zapata. I mean, that must have been 1988, 89, or somewhere in that era, 87, 88. I was working for Always Better Closets. And
87.
So it's like he wasn't known, but this person had it on a VHS cassette and wow. like popped it in. It was like, you like comedy. You're going to get a laugh out of this. And then when I was talking to Ben Stiller in, I don't know, 2015 at Kimmel's house, I was like, hey, man, I saw that video and it was fantastic. But have you done anything since then? He just started laughing. Can you find it? Is it on the internet?
It's on YouTube.
Popping in a VHS is like the original, like showing your phone. Like, you got to watch this video on your phone. It's like someone just put on a full on tape for you on their TV.
You know, but we still, things were still bootleg. I mean, look at the Jerky Boys. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, they
were,
like
people were, my roommates had, Ralph had like Jerky Boy cassettes, you know, like where did he get them? How did we function? How did that work? You
That's
have
always
it.
More fun when you don't know where it came from.
I
like
agree.
That. When you're growing up, it's like so exciting. You feel so illicit.
Well, the part that we used to have to engage in was this sort of forced foreplay. Like you had to go, all right, I'm going to send away for these tapes and I'm going to wait by the mailbox. And I mean, when they came 2 weeks later, it was a big deal. You know, now it's just get annoyed at your phone because you have bad reception. Come on, where's that video I asked for 55 seconds ago? This is an outrage, Chris.
This phone sucks.
This phone sucks.
All right, no, we have it.
We'll have it. We'll play it for you. You got to think Color Money and Cruise when you play it. From 87.
It's annoying. And the others. So is cheating. 20 years ago, Fast Eddie Felsen thought he hustled his last game. Then he met the kid. And now he's back. Newman. Cruise.
John Mahoney.
Yeah.
In Martin Scorsese's The Hustler of Money.
What can I tell you? The boss says no.
What is
salad
this?
Dressing?
You got salads? You need dressing? This is gourmet stuff.
All right. It's a little spotty, but you, you can pause it. But you get the idea. That's, to me, that's the first time I saw him. I don't know what, I don't even know if he wasn't doing. I don't know if he was on. I don't know if that's from something or he just shot it.
He was on SNL years later in like 89. So this would have been pretty young Ben Stiller.
Yeah. But the word, I mean, that's just the viral nature of things. Pardon the pun. But I mean, I'm in someone's house in Topanga putting a closet in and she's like, check this out. And I'm like, okay. And then, you know, 28 years later, when I see him, I go, hey, man, guess what? So that's
that performance really stuck with you, though. I mean, that's a testament.
I know.
To that video.
Yeah. Also, I remember the chick was kind of good looking and I thought I was going to have one of those moments that I'd always heard about where the guy got laid, but it never happened to me. But I thought maybe this is an entree into a more casual relationship,
it
a little less professional.
It sounds like a porn setup that a guy's installing your closet and then you hook up.
Yeah, I'd be like, you know, I got a VHS tape in the van. It's called Taboo 2. Let me spring that on you, Missy. Never happened. He was 22 at the time, working on Broadway. SNL picked it up and aired it later that year, hiring Stiller 2 years later. So. You got to get out there. Sorry, Gina, go ahead.
Well, you'd mentioned, you know, all the things that Jerry Stiller had seen in that time. And that reminded me from about a week ago, a 107-year-old woman has survived two global pandemics. When she was six, Marley Shapiro Asher got the Spanish flu of 1918. Then last month, she was admitted to the hospital with COVID-19. Doctors gave her, of course, a very small chance of surviving. They called her daughter to warn that Marley had less than 12 hours to live. And her daughter said, that doctor doesn't know my mother very well. 5 days later, she was discharged from the hospital, returned to her senior living community in Chevy Chase House in Washington, D.C. So a woman born under a fairly lucky star.
Well, good for her. But, you know, we always applaud all these people who live to 110 or 118 or 105 or whatever it is. Do we all know they're good people? I mean, statistically, most of them have to be racist, right? There's no way. You don't get to 108 without referring to a black guy as a Negro, do you? I mean, I'm just saying.
From bygone day.
I'm just saying. Statistically.
How late do you want to live? How old do you want to be? Do you want to be? Some people say they don't want to be in their hundreds because they think it would be like too sad to be so old.
I on a serious note, I've talked to Dr. Drew about this more than once, and he said, when you go to a nursing home and people literally, it takes two people to like turn you over in your bed and do that stuff. We have a weird obsession with life. Like, ironically, maybe the more we lose religion in our society, the more we cling to keeping people alive. Because I think it's my theory. I think if Nana dies and she's going to be reunited with Grandpa, the love of her life, then you let her go. But if you think she's just going in a hole in the ground, you go more feeding tubes and more ventilators. But we have a bizarre relationship with keeping people technically alive, even though they're not and would be dead without all this science and mechanized equipment. And we have to really revisit that. I don't think people, and Drew says that he has a lot of family members who are like, keep the person alive, like keep the feeding tube in, keep the breathing. When something is breathing for you, I'm sorry, you're dead. And I don't know, would you guys want to spend the last 2 years of your life just having two people like turn you over and clean you and all that? I don't want that.
I feel like I like the idea of getting to be very old because I want to witness, you know, my family's life and all these beautiful things that life brings. But I think if I had any huge health issues or like my mind started to go, I would rather not have to experience all of that.
Well, can I take this perfect opportunity to say, if you really do feel like that, please get it in writing and get an advance directive, because too many people, you don't think it's going to happen to you, and a family member gets sick and you don't know what they want. So I highly recommend, no matter how old you are, how great everything's going, get it in writing.
That's funny you mentioned that. My wife, Christy, and I just filled that out a matter of weeks ago. We both were on the same page, like, now, don't keep us alive artificially and blah, blah, blah. If it's over, it's over, that kind of stuff. But yeah,
was that intense to do that paperwork? It seems scary.
We just did it too. That was my birthday present to my fiance. It was one of my birthday presents.
Yeah, we were on the same page, so it wasn't a big debate. It was just kind of like, yeah, I feel the same way as you.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's sad what we do. And also, a lot of those people have dementia, so I don't even know if they can speak for themselves. Mm. Really, what we should do, as long as we're using the pandemic to slow down and have some uncomfortable conversations, this should be part of that conversation, especially so many people perishing in nursing homes. But I wouldn't mind if the DMV made you declare a major, like that you can put a sticker on your license if you're going to be an organ donor. I don't know. I feel like we could all settle it at the DMV in a fast and efficient way. Maybe.
So, sir, just to make sure, you're a no jaws of life.
That's right. No jaws of life. That's right. Save the pneumatics. Sorry. Or hydraulics. I don't remember what it is. Probably hydraulic. Yeah. Sorry.
He takes a lot of shit for reasons that some of us will just never understand. He seems like a good guy, and now he's proving it again. Guy Fieri just raised $20 million to help the coronavirus relief effort for restaurant workers specifically. He partnered with the National Restaurant Association Educational Foundation and a few other companies to launch the Restaurant Employee Relief Fund. The Relief Fund has given 40,000 one-time grants worth $500 each to any worker financially impacted by the pandemic. Donations are still being accepted, and those in need of a grant can visit the Relief Fund's website.
It'll be interesting when we're telling tales of this pandemic 50 years from now, and I'm like talking to my grandkids, and they're like, how bad was it, Pappy? Here's how bad it was. We found out that Guy Fieri was a good guy and that Ellen was evil. That's what we found out. That's how bad it was. That's how much time we had on our hands.
I was really happy to hear that about Guy Fieri. I don't have much of an opinion of him besides, like, I've seen, you know, a little bit of his shows or whatever. And he's the kind of guy who, like, wears sunglasses on the back of his head. Like, I just wouldn't expect this kind of behavior. I think it's amazing. But it sucks, too, because we have to, like, rely on celebrities. Like, yes. But it's a bummer to me that, like, we have to rely on celebrities to, like, solve these problems that our government should be solving. Like, it's just depressing that Guy Fieri has to, like, raise this money and resolve this issue. It shouldn't be like that.
I agree, but if anyone wants to pitch in, we'll take it.
Oh, and, yeah, totally.
And I think we look at Guy like formerly we looked at Guy like we look at magicians, right? Where you just go, that guy's a magician. You go, I don't like that guy. And then you go, why? He pays his taxes. He loves his kids. I don't trust him. He's up to something.
Something about him.
Something about him I don't like. And that was sort of the Guy Fieri thing, which is like nobody had any stories about him being rude or insensitive or anything. He hasn't even been Me Too'd. Like, you know the thing?
You know the thing
I keep saying about the Me Too movement? It's all the sneaky ones that are being Me Too'd. All the dudes that are like dude brosif dudes out there, like the guys who you would think would be Me Too'd, like the guy who hosted The Man Show, moi, or Guy Fieri, you'd think we would be the ones being Me Too'd. But the ones that were sneaking, the sneaky guys, those are the ones that are getting caught up in this.
And Guy Fieri visits, what, 3-4 restaurants an episode in Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives? If anyone's been around enough people to pull off something like this, I think the evidence is in.
Plus, and by the way,
Well, I was going to say, in terms of Me Too-ing, you got a struggling family-run restaurant. You know, it's an Italian joint. They really need business. You got the hot 22-year-old Italian daughter. And Guy's like, yeah, I may feature you on my show. It's a pretty rigorous screening process. You want to step into my office. I mean, you want to talk about the recipient of the casting couch. Guy could be all over that, but yet he chooses not to. And that's why he's a hero.
That's exactly right. And if you've seen that Shane Torres stand-up set, it's like 4 minutes from Conan O'Brien. It's iconic about why do we give Guy Fieri so much shit? He seems like such a nice guy. We treat him like he's in Nickelback. And by the way, what did Nickelback ever do to us?
Right.
Great stand-up set.
Yeah.
I secretly like Nickelback.
Oh, secrets out.
Controversial.
Show's over.
Well, thanks for coming. So this is one that we definitely will want to bring up to our sort of in-house nutritionist, Vinny Tortorich. An entire town in New York is going on a diet because of this pandemic. We've talked about this. We've thought, you know, is something like this going to happen? Well, the town of Huntington, it's located in Suffolk County, Long Island. Community has about 200,000 residents. They're doing it in an effort to make people healthier, especially because of this pandemic, which seems to affect those with obesity and diabetes and high blood pressure much more severely. The program was announced in a press release by a Suffolk County legislator and obesity specialist. It includes nutrition tips, junk food, cutting out junk food, adding fruits and vegetables. Program features meal planning, fitness, yoga, online classes, regular weigh-ins. So this whole town, this sounds like a movie of the week, is going on a collective diet.
Let me hit a LifeLock here. Better Business Bureau is warning people. Posting your senior pictures for graduation. We're just talking about this and the date and the high school. Put your names out there. Give scammers an opportunity to piece together your profile and hack you. It's important to understand how cybercrime is affecting our lives. Every day we put our info out there and every day it's at risk. So you're online and you're shopping and you're buying meals and it's all good, but you need to protect yourself. Cyber criminals finding new ways to steal identities every day. And if you're just monitoring your credit, you may not see what they're trying to do to you. LifeLock, leader in identity theft protection. If you become a victim of identity theft, LifeLock can help you restore your identity. And it's easier than you think to protect yourself these days with LifeLock. Get the industry standards. LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one prevents all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LifeLock or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
All right, Gina, what else?
Well, Dawson related to us the story of the swastika mask man, and he would like to defend himself, this man in the swastika mask. So I'm going to give you a little more detail on that story. So days after, in the Santee, California, which people were calling Clanty, the dude wore his homemade Ku Klux Klan mask to the grocery store. Now we have a guy wearing a swastika mask. This was at a Food for Less, happened last week, and NBC7 tracked down the man behind the mask. He claims the community completely misread the message. He says it was 100% intended to be a peaceful protest. The only Nazi thing I was trying to say is the governor is acting like one up on his podium, gloating about his power and taunting his power. The man said he was told not to return to the store wearing the same mask. So he was just making a statement, people.
Well, he can do both. I mean, he can make a statement and be offensive and have him removed
and
from
how?
The store. But I get it. It's not even a Nazi mask as I look at it. It's a mask that just has a piece of foam core to it and a little.
It's
going
to suffocate.
It's 4 inches by 5 inches. I'd have a simple question for this man before I render judgment. Okay, this is a protest to the oppression you feel you're experiencing from the government. Fine. I get it. Did that flag exist before this virus broke out, or did you just make it? Because if that was just lying around the house, then you're out. But if you
have to print that out.
But if you and your daughter made it last night.
Yeah.
No, I don't think there's any excuse for that. I think everyone knows what that symbol means and that wearing that is going to make people feel scared and unsafe. So I think if you're not, you just make a mask that says the governor is doing a bad job and wear that.
Or you just do the little Adolf mustache on the mask. I mean,
yeah,
that's a missed opportunity. You got it right there. Could have easily just done the little
Cameron.
Mustache.
Yeah, he's a douche.
Well, there's Brian seized up, I think.
It's contagious.
There's a new thing where you do things that are outrageous and then you go, hey, I was just commenting on whatever. And it's like, well, you know what you're doing.
Yes, 100%.
Because that's why we're talking about you.
Right. Well, we talked about, I think it was last week, how there's a big campaign in Belgium trying to get people to eat frozen potatoes and French fries because they got a surplus and they don't know what to do with it. Well, now it's over to France. People are being told to eat as much cheese as they can stuff in their gullet. This is to save the dairy industry because the lockdown sales of cheese have plummeted. Now farmers are sitting on thousands of tons of cheese that they are going to have to throw away if somebody doesn't get to eat.
Hold
so
on.
The dairy industry.
How do you do poutine? What is
fries with cheese on
all
top?
Right. We bring it all to Louisiana.
Come on, Canada,
Canada.
That's right.
Yeah, they love that shit over there. Just Montreal or whatever. This is the best day of your life.
You're absolutely right, Adam Carolla, problem solver.
That's right. I got the roller skate and the key. We just put them together, man. Yeah.
Fromage sans, which means let's act for cheese. So I think you're absolutely right. Let's get our neighbors to the north involved.
I guess it's got gravy and curds in it.
Oh,
but
does it?
And is it big? Obviously, it's big in I don't know, Montreal, Canada, like a French speaking. But I would guess New Orleans and places like that as well with that heritage. I don't think they'd
shy away from it. I've never seen it there, but I don't think anyone's going to turn down gravy fries.
No, like my pitch to folks who lived in New Orleans, if they went like, "What the fuck is that?" I go, "It'll make you fat." And they go, "Oh, give me that."
Oh, out of my way.
Wash it down with a beignet.
Yeah, I think they're probably. I feel like that's something you could get in New Orleans as well, but maybe I'm making that up. Anyway, carry on.
Well, I think we're very lucky that we get to just like all we have to do to like solve these problems is stay home and eat cheese. It's horrible.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the show Black Mirror, which is so fantastic and unbelievable, and it's a, sort of a sci-fi alternate universe into the future, but not. But the future that's only a few years away. That's kind of the concept and how technology can sometimes be our undoing. It's one of the most popular shows on Netflix and viewers want more. We crave it. We're always looking for when's the next season. But creator Charlie Brooker says in no time soon, because when asked by Radio Times about a sixth season, he said, at the moment, I don't know what stomach there would be for stories about societies falling apart, so I'm not going to work on any. Brooker says he's instead working on more positive news. He says, I'm sort of keen to revisit my comic skill set, so I've been writing scripts and trying to make people laugh. So he thinks that we have enough doom and gloom right now, and there won't be any Black Mirror for the future time being.
Rainbow Mirror.
That's right.
Gay flag mirror. I feel like people are probably watching more of those true crime shows and listening to more true crime podcasts than ever. Like, I
thank God,
Nancy
I was
Grace.
So worried that they would not be interested in watching my show anymore, and it's more popular than ever, even from the house when the twins are doing their homework and their Boy Scout work online, and people are still watching.
Yeah, I see. I think it's tantamount to like drinking too much. I think we're going to go down the drain on this one. Like, you're already feeling vulnerable and weird, and now you're sitting around watching other, like, well, my kids are quarantined, but as soon as they can go outside, they shall be abducted. That's the math I'm doing. So, look, God bless him, but I don't know. I bet people would watch the shit out of Black Mirror.
Well, and didn't they say that the movie Contagion and the movie Outbreak were like doing gangbuster numbers again on streaming services?
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of insane. Like, the second we were all in lockdown, everyone was watching those movies. I couldn't do it myself. It feels surreal, but yeah.
Were people looking for survival tips? Were they?
Yeah, maybe.
Or and also, was there some rogue group that watched a shit out of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, like, who just went the other direction? Like,
that's me. Yeah, that's
I think those people are healthier, not just because they're on my screen. I would say that anyway, because there is two takes on this, which is I'm going to watch something that's going to actually make this worse. But I there's a morbid curiosity. And then there's people that are like, I want to go outside and Dick Van Dyke in a flying car.
It is so funny you should say this, because I was just having this conversation with my one of my best friends who happens to be gay and work in musicals, Adam. But I told him, I between all the old classics, Carousel, Oklahoma, The Music Man, South Pacific, all these ones, I'm like, yawn, boring, never interested in my musical career because they weren't flashy. I crave wholesome Americana. I watched Robert Preston's Music Man 3 times last week. I can't get enough of this wholesome classic stuff, which I never really cared about and had time for, the stomach for before. I need it.
I got into my car with my son over the weekend, started driving, put it on the 40s channel. Like, I used to just listen to like 60s or classic rock, but I'm so with you. I put it on the 40s where they're talking about life is gay and I don't know all this stuff.
Life is a ball of cherry.
And Judy Garland was singing about clang, clang, clang went the trolley. And I was like, yeah, we're
ding,
live.
Ding, ding, the
hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime gal.
Yeah.
It's kind of perfect that when you're like driving on these streets and it feels so dystopic, like having some music like that, it's almost like an episode of Black Mirror, just floating in your own car with nobody around you. Super weird.
Yeah. And you could listen to Nine Inch Nails, but I think that would actually
we're living it.
Exacerbate it. All right. Yeah. Let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Well, let me just take 30 seconds out for our friends over at Geico. Geico would like to say thanks to you. Thanks for sharing all your dance moves and your DIY hair fails and your inner lip sync star qualities. And now Geico is going to share it with you. That's right. Geico is going to do a give back, 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers as well. So you're not driving as much, obviously, and they're going to kick some back. This Geico's committed to the long haul. That's 15% credit, and it'll last your full policy term at geico.com/giveback, and you go there for information and eligibility. All right. I want to thank Lauren for being such a delight. I'm looking forward to seeing the movie, The Wrong Missy. The trailer was really funny. It's available tomorrow on Netflix. As you hear this, David Spade and Nick Swartzen are all over this thing as well. Website, Lauren Lapkus, that's LAPKUS.com is where you go. Thanks, Lauren. This has been a treat. And Chris Fenton as well, Feeding the Dragon is the name of his book, which will be out on the 28th of July. And Bjorn Lomborg is joining the show to talk science tomorrow. And until next time, this is Adam for Chris and Lauren and Gina and Bald saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Pre-order Adam's book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. Get it now at adamcarolla.com.